From KUOW in Seattle, this is Sound Cues, a podcast fueled by listener curiosity. I'm Deborah Wong.
And I'm Anna Boyko-Wyrock. And right now we are speaking to you from the Pioneer Square Pergola.
Yes, the Pergola. It's this beautiful metal awning at the corner of Yesler Way and First Avenue in Pioneer Square. And Anna, why have you brought me here?
Well, you may not be aware, but right beneath our feet, there is an old public restroom.
An old public restroom beneath our feet, like underground?
Like underground, right here, right now.
Cool. And is it like an old one that's been down there forever?
Yes. In fact, there's even a historic plaque about it right over here.
Oh, cool. Let's go look at it. Okay, so there's this beautiful bronze plaque, and it says, "This ornamental glass and cast iron pergola provided shelter at the Northwest's first comfort station, a place featuring modern conveniences such as public restrooms." Wow, who would have known this was a comfort station?
I had no idea either. Underneath the ground, there are 25 toilets with stalls that are made out of white Alaskan marble. And there also used to be shoeshine stations as well.
Oh, that sounds so cool. Marble, toilets, and shoeshine stations. So what happened to them?
Well, sadly, they were closed during World War II and they never reopened. And we can't even get down there now because the Seattle Parks Department says it's not safe to go down there. But the point of all of this is that this comfort station is part of Seattle's unfortunate past of failures with public toilets. I'm sure you remember in 2004, the city opened up 5 high-tech toilets from Germany, and the promise was that those things could clean themselves, but they didn't work, and people used them for drugs and prostitution instead. And so after spending $5 million to put them in, the city ripped them out again.
Yeah, I remember it was controversial because the city spent so much money. And there were a lot of skeptics, people who thought there's no way this would work, and those skeptics were right.
And we still don't have enough public toilets around the city. So you could find one if you went to a park or a library, but if you wanted to go after business hours, there are only 6 in the entire city of Seattle. There are 6 24/7 public restrooms.
That's nothing for this city, a city this size. So is this just a problem that Seattle is facing, or are other cities and towns like doing a better job than we are in terms of like having more public toilets?
So that question, it's a great question. That's what a KUOW listener wanted to know too. And so in this episode, I'm going to tell you about examples from other cities and what we in Seattle can learn from them. First, this break.
On the Radioactive Youth Media Podcast, teens tell stories we're not hearing anywhere else.
We're both queer and both brown and both Muslim.
Subscribe for stories that reflect our world.
On March 14th, we walked out of our classes. Today, we marched to the streets of Seattle. And in November, we'll vote. And in a few years, you'll see us running for office.
Download the Radioactive Podcast at kuow.org/podcast.
We're going to get back to Seattle in a moment, but first I want to answer the question you and the listener asked. Has any city figured out public toilets?
So I'm walking into the bathroom that's actually outside of the fortress in the Franciscan Monastery of Our Lady of the Cave on Lopud Island in Croatia.
This is my friend Kayla Higgins. She's one of the people who responded to call-outs we posted on Facebook to get recordings of public toilets around the world.
So it kind of feels like you're inside a cave because the bathroom's actually made of the walls of the fortress, and the acoustics are pretty good for that reason. I'm signing off. This has been Kayla Higgins in Croatia on the island of Lopud.
Hi, this is George Nunes calling from Los Angeles, California. I'm actually in a public restroom at the Silver Lake Recreation Center. This is a fairly standard bathroom setup with toilet, urinal, wash basin, and I have to say, it's remarkably clean. This is George Nunes reporting from LA, and even though I'm in a public restroom, this is NPR.
And my mom and dad, Patricia Boyko and Carl Wyrock, documented 4 public toilets for me during their recent trip to Taiwan, including this one.
We were walking along the beach, needed a bathroom, and this is what we found. Something called Toi Toi, T-O-I-T-O-I, sanitary system. It looks pretty good. I'm going to take a picture of it, and then I'll send you the rest.
It looks just like a porta potty from the outside. On the inside...
Okay, that was really smelly, and I'm opening the door, thank goodness, and getting out, woo, into the cool air. It's one of those, you know, like squat toilet things. I like that better than our porta potties. I would rate this as a bathroom experience, 3 out of 10, woo, because it's so stinky.
Your mom is such a good sport, and she even rated the toilets for you. How awesome.
Yeah.
That was really fun hearing that on-the-scene reporting from public toilets around the world. So we've heard from Croatia, Los Angeles, and Taiwan. So what did you find out from all this crowdsourcing you did?
Well, those reports from bathrooms were really fun. But I just didn't feel like I got enough data to answer the listener's question, has any city figured out public toilets? So I did more research. And here's what I learned.
What did you learn?
It's not necessarily about the toilets themselves.
No?
No, it's about us.
Okay, what do you mean?
So, of course, we need toilets that are well-designed, but the key to good public toilets is the values we have around toilets and how we translate those values into action. And I learned this from an expert, Jack Sim. He leads the WTO.
The WTO?
The World Toilet Organization.
The World Toilet Organization.
Of course. And the World Toilet Organization is an advocacy group based in Singapore. But I reached Jack at a hotel room in Cairo where he was attending a conference about global development. And when I asked him where the really good public toilets are around the world, he named a different country, Japan. Jack credits what the toilet represents in Japanese culture.
A toilet is your face. It's a symbol of what you do and what you stand for.
The toilet is your face. That's a strange image, but it sounds like a very Asian image.
And I love the way that he put this. A toilet is your face. It means that it's your outward-facing identity. So that means you have to keep the toilet clean because a dirty toilet is like having a dirty face.
If you go to a Japanese person's house, the image of that family is the toilet. If the toilet is dirty, you have a very bad opinion of the whole family.
Same thing if you want to do business, but the factory you want to buy goods from has a dirty toilet. It raises some questions about the rest of the factory. And he says that's why Japanese public toilets are so nice.
In Japan, all public toilets are clean, so you can actually feel very confident going into any one of them.
Yeah, I do seem to remember when I lived in Asia that Japanese public toilets were okay, and they were much better than public toilets in China, which at that time were pretty universally awful.
Okay. And did you have any trouble finding a public toilet when you visited Japan?
I don't think I ever did.
Right. And so on top of being nice, public toilets in Japan are plentiful. They're really easy to find in urban areas, you know, train stations, department stores, playgrounds. And, you know, all of this made me think about what this would mean for Seattle if our outward-facing identity as a city were our public toilets, or the lack of our public toilets. What does that make us? We see poop on the sidewalk when we walk around town, and that's our face right now. What would happen if we changed our mindset around public toilets so they were that important to us, as important as our face?
Well, you know, I do think that when people see poop on the sidewalk, there's probably incredible discomfort. Like, I don't think anyone wants to see that. But at the same time, you'd probably have to make a really big cultural change to do what the Japanese do, to put that much importance on making sure those spaces are clean.
Yeah.
So short of that, what else did you find? What else could we do?
Well, yeah, I asked Jack about that, too. You know, he's based in Singapore, and he says the government there didn't want to build a lot of public toilets because it might reflect badly on the government if the toilets were dirty, and the government didn't want to be criticized, so instead, they passed a law.
So they passed a law that every commercial building that does business with the public will have to open their toilet to the public free of charge. Or if they like to charge, it's up to them, but most of them behave free of charge.
And this is Singapore's model. Pass a law. If you have a business, open your toilet up. Can you imagine if Seattle City Council tried to pass that kind of law here?
Yeah, that would be really interesting. I mean, I think a lot of businesses would probably object. I mean, right now, you know, you go into a coffee shop or a restaurant and businesses lock up their restrooms. There's a key or a code because, you know, if they open them up, given the shortage of restrooms in the city, I think they'd kind of be overwhelmed, or at least they'd be afraid of being overwhelmed with people trying to use them.
Right. And I said that to Jack, too, that businesses wouldn't be happy about that kind of law. And he said one thing business owners should realize is that they might consider their toilet a liability, but really, toilets are assets. And even if you make your toilet free of charge, you're attracting people to the business, you get more foot traffic, and then you can sell them stuff. And as for attracting homeless people or IV drug users, the kind of people that businesses might not want in their bathroom, Jack says that's really a different problem. We have to address that separately. The city needs to supply public toilets specifically for people living outside, and those toilets need to be close to where homeless people are living. By the way, Jack also said that if anybody from city council is listening, they can call him up and he's happy to help Seattle work through our public toilet problems.
Well, that's a really generous offer, but, you know, Singapore and Seattle are pretty different places, and I'm wondering to what degree things that work in Singapore would work in Seattle. Aren't there any examples closer to home that we can look at?
Yeah. So there is a successful example a lot closer to home, and it's an example of public toilets that advocates and even Seattle City Council members are looking toward. I had a friend check them out.
Hello, Sound Cues. This is Gilad Gray, reporting from San Francisco, near the corner of Market and Fifth Street, where I'm standing inside a public toilet. And I must admit, it doesn't suck.
Gilad was visiting San Francisco's public toilets, known as pit stops.
It smells only faintly of urine and is remarkably clean and, frankly, spacious.
Around San Francisco, there are public toilets in 25 locations. Some, like the one Gilad went into, are basically roundish green pods built right into the sidewalk. They're staffed by attendants who are called pit stop monitors. And again, a big takeaway here is that the solution to public toilets is not so much about the toilets, but about people. In this case, the people who staff the pit stops, like Naima Hawkins. She worked as a pit stop monitor and rose the ranks to become a supervisor. She says these pit stops and the workers are a promising example now, but it wasn't always that way. The toilets were a big problem before the city employed the pit stop monitors.
Why was that?
Well, without any supervision, people moved into the toilets.
I've seen people be in there for days with their shopping carts and blankets and just like needles everywhere.
But now every bathroom has a 5-minute limit and the monitor will let you know when the time limit is up.
We're like banging on the door like, you have another minute left. Bam, bam, bam. Your time is up. If they're like, my stomach hurt, can you give me a few more minutes? Then we're good. But sometimes they're like, oh, screw you and I'm not coming out.
In that case, Naima says the person inside gets a warning, and then the monitor can unlock the door and open it from the outside to force that person to leave. Sometimes the monitors even call the police to evict someone from a bathroom. The monitors are also there to clean the bathrooms, make sure they're a good space for everyone. In San Francisco, the program has expanded from those roundish green pods, which are permanent, and now the program includes mobile toilets, too. They come as two toilets on the back of a trailer, trucked in and out of a location every day. They have air conditioning, electricity, and running water.
It's not a porta potty. It's actually a toilet that flushes. And when it flushes, it goes into the back into this big poop pool, I call it. But it's inside of this big tank and it holds it.
Naima says throughout the day, a lot of different kinds of people use the toilets.
So morning time is really like the homeless people, but in the afternoons, a lot of city workers use it, people who are on their lunch break. And nighttime is more like everybody, children, older people, homeless people, people shopping, tourists.
All these pit stops have Sharps containers and doggy bags for people to pick up poop on the go. Naima noticed that sometimes people wanted doggy bags, even though she couldn't see a pet.
So I'm like, do you have a pet? I want to clean up behind myself. I don't want to just poop on the ground. And I'm like, you know, that's It's sad, but it's true. Like, but thanks. We're cleaning up behind yourself.
San Francisco still has a problem with feces on the sidewalk in places. But Naima says she notices the areas around the toilets are cleaner because of her and her team's work.
It's kind of like a thankless job, but at the end of the day, you know you made a difference in that area for the time you were there. So it's kind of rewarding because you can see the difference in certain blocks. And you walk two blocks up and it's like a total mess. And you're just like, you know what? I'm glad I kind of kept that area the way it is.
Other cities are adopting pit stops too. Los Angeles, Miami, Denver, for example. Now, people in Seattle also have their eyes on the pit stop model. Tiffany McCoy is the lead organizer with Real Change.
We believe everybody has a right to have a place to go.
I met up with her at Seattle City Hall right after a meeting she had with a city council member. Tiffany has been able to get a couple city council members on board, and it looks like a request to fund mobile pit stops will be in the city's budget for next year.
To annually run five of these mobile pit stops, including staffing, roughly, is about $726,000. That's for 10 toilets.
These are the toilets that come on the back of a trailer with flushing water and electricity and an attendant to monitor the toilets and keep them clean. The cost comes out to an estimated $72,000 per toilet per year. But Tiffany says compare that to one toilet that was installed in Ballard over the summer. That one toilet in a permanent structure cost over $500,000. And a lot of the cost was from installing plumbing. Tiffany says advocates like how quickly the pit stop model with mobile toilets could launch.
What's great about it is you don't have to build out that brick and mortar structure. You don't have to worry about plumbing or electricity and retrofitting all of that.
And Deb, here's yet another way that people are so important to making good public toilets work. People, like city leaders, are the ones who allocate funding to install toilets and keep them running. Remember those public toilets we stood on top of in Pioneer Square?
Sure do.
Yeah. So they shut down because of lack of funding and stayed shut because the city wouldn't pay for them. And now, instead of being able to use those toilets, people pee on the sidewalk on top of the toilets.
Which is gross.
Which is really gross. And I didn't mention it while we were there, but I definitely saw some wet marks by where we were standing. Okay, so let's get back to the listener's question. I can tell you that, yes, there are places around the world that have figured out public toilets. Some folks in Seattle are trying to get our city to do the same thing. But it takes much more than just the toilets to make public toilets successful. It takes commitment and money.
Well, I will be really, really interested to see if Seattle gets its act together and actually does something about public toilets in the city. Thanks, Anna.
Thank you. If you have a question about Seattle or our region, head on over to our website, kuow.org/soundcues, and drop us a note. Or call us at 206-616-3805 and leave us a voicemail. Your question might be featured in a future episode.
Sound Cues is a production of KUOW in Seattle. Kyle Norris is our producer. Jeannie Yandel is our editor.
Our production team includes Catherine Banwell, Gil Agutter, Caroline Chamberlain Gomez, Jill Jackson, and Brendan Sweeney. Michael Parker composed our theme music.
I'm Deborah Wong.
And I'm Anna Boyko-Wyrock.
Thanks for listening.